This is The Record on KUOW. I'm Ross Reynolds. Why do we have an obesity crisis? Dr. Deborah Cohen thinks she knows, and she has some ideas on how to end it. Dr. Cohen is a scientist at the RAND Corporation, a nonprofit think tank, and her new book is called A Big Fat Crisis: The Hidden Forces Behind the Obesity Epidemic and How We Can End It. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me.
You write that your interest in addressing this issue is not strictly professional. What are the personal reasons?
Well, I know a lot of people that have problems with their weight. My father was obese. I have other family members with the same problem. Dear friends, you know, it's the public health crisis of our time.
And as you recount, 2 out of 3 adults and 1 of 3 children are either overweight or obese. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is really categorical. There's a scale, you know, of measuring weight. It's continuous. And just a cut point is placed at 25 for a measurement of body mass index, which is a ratio of the weight over the height squared. And so the cut point for overweight is over 25 BMI, body mass index, and for obese, it's 30.
You write that it's irrational to not eat healthy. Why is it irrational?
Well, if we want to live long, you know, supposedly everybody wants to optimize their life, have the longest and healthiest life. And so we can only do that if we eat a balanced, healthy diet on a routine basis.
So why do so many of us so often behave irrationally when it comes to our eating habits?
Well, the main reason is that humans are not rational. The other reason is that our country has been turned into a food swamp. And so everywhere we go, we're inundated with too much food, with food that is unhealthy and also with extra large portions.
Let's talk about the first part, about what's in us that prevents us from acting rationally when it comes to eating food. You've written a paper, and it was called Eating as an Automatic Behavior. What's that mean?
Well, most of our actions actually are automatic, that we can act without intention, without awareness, without control, and without insight. And so eating is actually one of those automatic behaviors. So, for example, if you're sitting in front of the TV, you've got a bowl of popcorn in your lap, you can watch TV and at the same time eat the popcorn, and you don't have to pay attention to your hand going to the bowl, picking up the popcorn, putting it in your mouth, chewing, swallowing. Those things happen automatically without conscious awareness, and you might even finish the whole bowl and only realize that you've done that when it's all gone.
Now, that certainly happens. I was that guy. But I'm talking to you with Deborah Cohen. Her book is called A Big Fat Crisis. But sometimes I'm able to control my eating, and some people are very good about controlling their eating. If it is an automatic behavior that we don't have control over, why are some people able to do it?
Well, it's not that we don't always have control over it, but we do have the capacity to eat automatically without control. So if we're multitasking, we're more likely to eat without control. Because we can only pay attention to one thing at a time. Yes, it's true. There are many people who can control exactly how much they eat, and that's because they're devoting a lot of attention to it. But because we have a limited cognitive capacity, we really have limits on all the things we can control. And so if we're working on our eating, then we're missing something else. You know, for example, people who try to quit smoking, they sometimes end up eating too much because they're paying attention to not smoking. And the other thing is, you know, we have willpower, but willpower is also limited. It fatigues like a muscle. And so we could control ourselves, you know, in the morning, the afternoon, early evening. But there at the end of the day, we might have exhausted all of our willpower. And it's times that we're under stress that it tends to, you know, leave us and we relapse and break our diets.
Now, Dr. Cohen, some people are listening and they're thinking, well, if willpower is like a muscle, I can get big muscles. I can get strong muscles and they can get stronger. I can make my willpower stronger.
Well, there's to an extent people can increase their willpower, but actually willpower is genetic. And so there are some people who will never be able to increase their willpower to the extent that other people who are born with better, you know, quote unquote, willpower genes. There are studies that have followed children over time. I think many people might be aware of those marshmallow experiments where they had 4-year-olds in a room and they said, well, here's a marshmallow. Don't eat it right now. If you can wait for 3 minutes, I'll give you 2 marshmallows. And, you know, a lot of the kids were able to control themselves, but many kids didn't. Well, they followed those kids up, you know, 10 years later, 15 years later, even 40 years later. And the kids that were unable to resist the marshmallow at 4 years old still had lower self-control than their peers 40 years later.
That's so interesting that impulse control can be partly genetic. Is the impulse to eat poorly a subdivision of that larger genetic impulse?
Well, I don't think there's any impulse to eat poorly.
Yeah.
See, what happens is that people are very sensitive to cues in their environment. And so if there's chocolate chip cookies, you know, or cake or chips in front of us, it triggers our desire to eat. And that happens to everybody. Absolutely everybody can be tempted by food, even if they've already eaten and they're already full. You know, there's always room for dessert.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really the environment, and it's also a situational factor, so that maybe one day the chocolate chip cookies are there and we can say no. But another day, after we've had an argument with our wife or we've had a lot of assignments, we won't be able to resist. So it's not really an individual characteristic. It's an environmental characteristic.
Should we give up on trying to exercise willpower over our eating habits?
Well, no, there's no reason we should give up. But really, if we want to make progress on the obesity epidemic, we can't limit it to willpower. We need to think about ways to modify the environment so that we're not constantly undermined and stressed. And so that, you know, when we do have limits on our self-control, there's nothing so convenient that we end up, you know, making mistakes and, you know, making ourselves sick.
Let's turn to these cues that we get wherever we go to eat poorly. I'm talking to Dr. Deborah Cohen about her book, A Big Fat Crisis, The Hidden Forces Behind the Obesity Epidemic and How We Can End Them. Walk through the world, particularly in America, and there are so many prompts and cues to eat something that's not really good for you. Some call this a problem of food deserts, by which they mean there are poor neighborhoods where it's hard to find good food. It's hard to find fresh vegetables and fruit and grains. Do you think that's the problem?
Well, it's exactly the inverse or the converse. The problem is it's a food swamp, so that there's too much of the unhealthy, tempting, you know, foods, too many chips, soda, cookies, candy. That's really what we need to control, because it's people eating too much of that food that's creating the risks for chronic diseases.
Now, some businesses, that food manufacturers, have put out low-calorie food, low-sodium food. Some fast food restaurants make a big deal about how now you can get a salad here. You can get some things. You can get fruit, cut up fruit in a bowl when you go to the fast food restaurant. And they say that there are healthy things that are out there.
Yeah, so part of the problem is the marketing of those items. Yes, there are alternatives available in many places, but certainly not all places. But the way that foods are promoted actually increase the odds we're going to buy the unhealthy items. So, for example, just by having a combo with cheese, burger, you know, with a burger, fries, and a soda, that actually reduces the need for making decisions on the three things separately. And it turns out that when they're offered together, people are more likely to buy them. When if you compare if they were offered separately, they might not buy all three of those.
That's so interesting. So the way the choices are presented nudge us in a certain direction?
Yeah, absolutely. In a restaurant, it turns out people are more likely to choose the items that are first or last in a menu. If something's highlighted as a special or it has a picture next to it, we're more likely to choose that.
Now, in this part of the problem of obesity and being overweight, you call for stricter regulation of food sales. What are some things do you think we should be implementing?
Well, I think in restaurants, what we need are standardized portion sizes so that when people dine out, they're not automatically served more food than they need. We should have a standard single portion available for all foods. So it's predictable. When you go out, you'll know what you're getting. And if people want more than that standard portion, there's no reason they can't order more. But we don't have any benchmarks now and against which we can gauge how much we're eating.
Another area, you know, you go to the register and there's all that candy lined up there. You think there should be government regulations to prevent that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we need to curtail impulse marketing. And it turns out that when you put candy at the cash register or chips and soda on the end of aisles in supermarkets, markets or on special displays. They end up attracting people's attention, and items placed in those locations sell 2 to 5 times more than if they were placed elsewhere at the store. And the manufacturers pay the retailers for that shelf space. They pay to have those items there. And when they put junk food there, that means we are going to end up eating more junk food.
And Dr. Cohen, we could walk out on the Ave right outside the station right now and find several Indian buffets, all-you-can-eat buffets. You think that should be banned?
Well, I think buffets are fine, but if it's not sold all-you-can-eat for one price, then I think that's a good solution, so that if we had to weigh the food, for example, and pay by the ounce, that could be something that would help people control what they took. It's an incentive when it's, you know, all you can eat for one price for people to overeat.
Now, of course, the mayor of New York instituted some plans to try to ban the Big Gulp, ban those giant 48-ounce containers of soda, which has really clearly been tied to the obesity crisis. Do you support those kind of measures?
I think that's a step in the right direction. The problem with that regulation, the Bloomberg soda ban, is that I don't think it went far enough, and it was limited just to sodas. So, for example, he was limiting the size of the soda to 16 ounces. Well, according to the American Heart Association, if their recommendation on added sugar is to limit it for women to less than 100 calories and for men less than 150 calories. Well, 16 ounces is way more than the recommendation, because the American Heart Association has good evidence to suggest that if we eat more than that, it increases our risk of heart disease. And so really, 100 calories for women, it's 8 ounces, and for men, that's 12 ounces.
Now, a lot of people are listening to you saying, I don't want government telling me how food should be regulated like this. This is government going too far. And in fact, we've heard that argument when it comes to the Big Gulp ban. But one of the most interesting parts of a big fat crisis is you kind of go back in history and point out other government actions that have been considered outrageous at the time, but have resulted in really positive health impacts. What are some of those examples?
Okay, so, you know, the first one, of course, are all of this regulations for sanitary hygiene. We've had indoor plumbing. We prevent people from dumping their wastes in public places. We also, for alcohol, we have regulations that limit where alcohol can be sold. And we also have standards for portion sizes for drinks of alcohol. You know, some people say that, you know, I'm advocating a nanny government. And to some extent, I am. You know, think of the perfect nanny, Mary Poppins. Did you know that she was an advocate for portion control?
I did not.
Yeah, she recommended 1 spoonful of sugar. And compare that to
the
Big Gulp.
A spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down, not 2 spoonfuls.
Right, right. And the food and the beverage industry says a 20-ounce soda is what we should be drinking. That's 16 spoons of sugar. So who do we want, you know, on our side? It's not going to be the food industry.
Where do you think we are in this last thing we've been discussing? The government of Denmark has tried a little bit of regulating some of the food. And we don't have that much time left, but where do you think we are in actually getting popular support or government political support for these kind of measures?
We are at the very beginning of this. We really are not talking about government regulation very much. I don't think most people understand the limits that individuals face in controlling their weight. You know, right now, the popular belief is that anyone who's overweight or obese, it's because they're personally irresponsible or it was their own choice. But let's face it, 2 out of 3 Americans are overweight or obese. And I don't think it's appropriate to call Americans as irresponsible. You know, they work hard, they raise families, they pay taxes, they volunteer in their communities. So being your weight is not a measure of your character. It's really the environment that's responsible.
Dr. Deborah Cohen, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Okay, my pleasure.
The book is called A Big Fat Crisis, and she's going to be speaking at Town Hall this evening at 7:30. We've just scratched the surface of what she talks about in this book. She'll be talking about it more and answering your questions there. This is The Record on KUOW. With David Hyde, I'm Ross Reynolds.